The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
Cleo spent the first night in almost 3 weeks with her family in her own bed after a dramatic and intense rescue in the early hours of Wednesday morning. But even though this nightmare is over, she's alive, she's safe, back in the arms of her mother, there's still a long way to go in the investigation. And that means police will need to speak to little Cleo to find out what exactly happened. But how does that happen when your key witness is just 4 years old? Joining me now is criminologist and psychologist Dr. Michelle Noon. Good morning, Doctor.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
Really well, thanks. It's so nice to be talking about a case like this where there's been a positive outcome.
Yeah, I know. It's just been wonderful to hear, and I think we all slept better last night as a result of this news, and it's just been terrific and, yeah, been a great, great, great outcome so far.
And the rescue operation was like something out of a movie, but the police work is only going to intensify from here as they gather evidence and build a case against the man who's alleged to have abducted Cleo. Mm-hmm. So what will happen now from a police perspective in terms of actually interviewing Cleo? Because I imagine it's a very sensitive thing to attempt.
Absolutely. And there's heaps to keep in mind when we're talking about working with very young children in this way. And I'm more than happy to take you through it. But before even talking about that, we should really talk just about the strategy police are likely to use and what they're going to have to think about in relation to next steps. So if I was building the brief around this particular case, I'd be going straight back to the criminal code. I'd be thinking, what could we potentially be charging this person with, and what evidence would I need to help support that? And some of that could be physical evidence, forensic evidence. Some of it could actually come from the accused person, so trying to figure out their story. And there might be lots that they'd be willing to share. But certainly Cleo's perspective and her experience is going to become a really important part of that picture. Mm. So you'd be looking at the criminal code. What do we need to know? What do we need to find out? And how can we create an evidence brief for that? And then you'd also be thinking, what happens then, you know, as the police prosecutors, putting this case together, putting it to a judge, potentially putting it to a jury, where could it trip up? What are the defense going to catch us up on? And often it's the interview strategies used with children that are of really keen interest to all of those parties.
Yeah, right. And so what do police need to be mindful of when they interview a child, and how can there be potential pitfalls that might then be counterproductive in a trial?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the things we know about kids is that, and this is something the community don't often know, but kids are great truth tellers. So children often are fantastic witnesses because they're very, very committed to the truth. And they're very committed to fact. So what we say about kids is they're not very conceptual. They're not very abstract. And anyone who's been around kids knows this, hey? Because you ask a kid, like, did you miss me today when you're at school? They look at you blankly. A four-year-old, a five-year-old would look at you blankly. And that's because they're so concrete in their thinking. And that's really terrific when it comes to interviewing. So what we would be encouraging any police interviewers to do is really working with Cleo or any child in this circumstance to ascertain, you know, some clarity about what truth looks like. So the beginning of these interviews is always lots and lots of what we call rapport building, lots of warmth, lots of often lots of fun, but also getting the child to be really clear about what truth looks and sounds like. So we ask lots of questions about that, and we support that child to actually talk to us in a way where they're going to correct us if we're wrong, which is really hard for kids. So, you know, if we're getting the story wrong and we're repeating back something they've said, that they're actually going to go, nope, that's not what happened. What happened was da 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 da.
Yeah, right.
And we find that's a really effective way to work with kids.
It's really interesting because it's, you know, there's this perception with the public that the testimonies from children might not be as valid or reliable as those from an adult. But it sounds like you're saying it's quite the opposite in some cases. But it seems like the key is establishing that rapport, that level of comfort, so the child can feel, empowered enough to contradict, to say, no, that's not what happened. This is what happened.
Exactly. So often we do things when we're interviewing kids, you know, we'd always be encouraging police members, to wear, you know, what we call civvies rather than their uniforms. So we have experimental research that shows when children are being interviewed by people in their civvies, just casual clothes versus uniforms, they're much more likely to correct that adult if the adult's got it wrong. Even physically, the space, you know, kids, they might prefer to sit on the floor. So we would sit on the floor with them. We might even sit, if they feel comfortable, side by side with them while they're drawing something. And we're going to have a general conversation with them. And the other thing we're going to do is probably break that interview down into very small bite-sized chunks. So with an adult, you know, it's not best practice, but you may spend 3 hours interviewing an adult. With a child, you'd be looking at, you know, 20-minute chunks, probably at a maximum, over the course of a period of time. Just so that you can really retain their attention.
Mm. And so the public might be surprised to learn that the police didn't immediately interview Cleo after she was found. She was in hospital, reunited with her parents. And instead, it seems that they're waiting a period of time. They're getting specialist investigators who are used to dealing with child victims to fly to Carnarvon to speak to her. They don't seem to be in a huge rush. Is that pretty standard practice?
It is now, yeah. And that's because we've had a lot of cases come through where children have been interviewed by people who don't necessarily have a background in interviewing children or the expertise in interviewing children, and they've done things that have upset the investigation and been used really successfully by defence barristers to, you know, to result in what we might even consider to be miscarriages of justice. Mm. So often with children, inexperienced interviewers will do things like ask what we call closed or leading questions. And you'll see that this is a style of questioning that's used with adults to children anyway. So it sounds like this. Did you play soccer at school today? So that's a closed leading question. Someone who's experienced would say, what happened at school today?
Mm.
So with a question like that, it's only a little tweak, but we get much better evidence and it's much less easy to refute. So it's definitely worth the time, the investment of time, to bring in experts to have these critical conversations.
Mm. And the other side of this equation is Cleo's mental state, because she's been away from her family for 18 days. We don't really know what has happened in that 18 days, but for any child, that separation from a parent would be traumatic in itself. So I guess, how do you go about taking care of Cleo's mental well-being in these interrogations? Is that something that they really focus on as well, not to re-traumatise her?
Absolutely. So when we do, you know, trauma-informed interviewing, the focus we have is on, and this is for anyone of any age, is creating lots of choice, being really empowering. We do very collaborative in our approach, and we know this is much more supportive. We also know that humans, and particularly children, are extremely resilient. So part of the process there can be around, you know, supporting their autonomy, their voice, giving them an opportunity to talk through what's going on, but also not dredging things up and waiting a period psychologically just to see where things land. And this is very common practice now with all different kinds of trauma, whether it's, you know, an accident in the workplace, whether it's a natural disaster, whether it's a grief-related event, whether it's something like this, a criminal event is what we're potentially talking about here, of course, is that we would certainly want to wait a little bit of time just to let the dust settle so that, you know, mental health and well-being is a really big focus.
Mm. It's certainly going to be fascinating where it goes now. And Dr. Michelle Noon, you've certainly given us a lot of insight into this process that I know the general public is very interested in. Criminologist and psychologist Dr. Michelle Noon, thank you for speaking to us on The West Live today.
Thanks, Ben. Have a wonderful day.